This is a production of Cornell University.
Hi, everyone. It's 12:15. We still have members joining, so I'll give it another minute or two. And EA members, as you join, if you would rename yourself to have EA in front of your name, makes things smoother throughout. Thank you. Hey everyone, we're just going to give it a few more seconds here. We still have members rolling in. Seem to have slowed down, so I'll have Andrea start with roll call. I just want to do one more reminder for EA members to rename themselves to have EA in front of your name, just to make it easier for tracking throughout the meeting. Andrea?
Yes. I'm going to do roll call, just if you could say present. If you don't say anything, a lot of times after the fact, I'll get people who say that they were here, but just not at the beginning. We might want to move roll call maybe a little bit later, and we always seem to get folks that are sort of at the end. But first is Adrian Durant, Alan Mittman. I saw Alan on here. Yes, you're muted, but I see you.
Present.
Oh, there you go. Andrea Hanlamatum here. Anise Schaft.
Present.
Brandon Fortenberry. Brenda Fisher. Brian Goodell.
Present.
Deborah Howell.
Present.
Derek Barrett.
Present.
Ellen Miller.
Here.
Hey Hey DePew. Jackie Crookie.
I'm here.
Jamie Duong. Jeremy Stewart. Jessica Withers.
I'm here.
You're here. Jessica Townley. Joe Canella. Justin Chandler.
Present.
Michelle Loparco.
Present.
Kate Supron.
I'm here.
Kit Tannenbaum, I know, is not here today. Yep. Hey, hey, DePew is here. Christy Mahoney.
Hello.
Yeah. Lisa Zacharias. Marcus Brooks. Marcy Benda.
Present.
I think Marin Cherry is still on leave.
Actually, here
oh,
today.
Yay! Well, good. Hi, Marin. Thanks for joining us.
We'll see Michelle. How long I can stay.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, whatever time we have you, that would be great. Michelle Podolik. Stacy Coyle. Stephanie Rezu. If you could tell us, so I'm saying it right.
You were pretty close, Rezu.
Okay. And I think that's everybody. If for some reason you missed roll call, Let us know. Just send me something in the chat, and we'll make sure that it's included. Oh, Adrian Durant is now here, just so we all know. He just was admitted. So that's everything for me. Back to you, Jessica.
Thanks, Andrea. So next up, I'll read the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the homeland, the traditional homelands of the Goyekono, the Cayugan Nation. The Goyekono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Goyekono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Goyekono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Thank you, everyone. We have our new members, and happy to see Marin back. Our first item today, actually, is we have a guest presentation. Oh, no, sorry. Approval of the minutes. That's going too fast. Our first item is approval of the minutes from October 20th. Do I hear any motions to edit or motions to approve? Ellen?
I move that we approve the minutes as written.
I second it.
Seconded by Ellen. If any dissent? Seeing none, the minutes from October 20th are approved as written. Thank you. So now we will move to our guest presenter. This is Danny Haynes, Associate Dean of Students for Conflict Coaching and Case Management. She's going to be presenting on the Conflict Coaching Program. Hi, Danny. Are you ready?
Yes, thank you. So I have a PowerPoint, and I'm going to present to you all the training that I, or a smaller version of the training that I typically do for the conflict coaching. And so if someone can keep an eye on the chat or when folks raise their hand and just let me know, because I won't be able to see you all. Is everyone able to see this screen?
Yes, looks good.
Thank you. So, good afternoon. As stated, my name is Danny Haynes, and I'm here to talk to you about how can we manage conflict and build community. And I'm the Associate Dean of Students for Conflict Coaching and Case Management. So I thought it was amazing that you all did the land grant acknowledgement. I haven't witnessed a great deal of departments do that during their meeting, so that's great. I won't do it, but I will say the reason I love that we issued that over the summer is because it's essentially like the way restorative principles, practices, and justice is. It is acknowledging the harm and trying to restore and repair it. And I think that's what Cornell is doing. And really just how can we restore the harm caused? And so this acknowledgement is the first step, and I thought it was great that you all did that. So a little bit about myself. I am first and foremost a mother to my baby girl, Ari. She turned 7 in August, so really excited about that, although I'm a little sad because I miss baby Ari, but I absolutely love her at this age. Secondly, I am from Ohio. I attended The Ohio State University for undergraduate, receiving my bachelor's in political science and another bachelor's in African American African Studies, and I have my master's from Webster University. In global international relations. And while I was attending my program for graduate school, I actually lived abroad, which is why you see the map. And I lived in various countries in Europe and in Beijing, China, to write my thesis. And so the handshake is because I really, really love connecting with people. I love being authentic and meeting new people, really where they are. And originally when I started that part of my life, I thought meeting people where they are meant location only, right? So I would travel abroad, immerse myself in the culture, et cetera. However, it's expanded since becoming a professional, especially within higher education, because each person is in a different space or part in their life. And so how can I be of service to them in the moment, in the space that they are in? Which goes into this last image of the two people, really saying how much I really love helping people. I live by this motto that I want to be the person I needed when I needed someone. So every day I really just strive to be of service in whatever capacity I'm needed and that I'm able to do. So I am a lover of higher education, and really what it can provide. When I took this role at Cornell almost a year ago, so it's been about 10 months, one thing that struck me is Cornell's forward thinking and boldness in acknowledging how we are focused on combating racism with the anti-racism statement and a lot of the programs around diversity, equity, and inclusion being expanded. The other thing about higher education is it creates so many opportunities for so many folks, especially minoritized and marginalized individuals. It can really be a life-changing matter. So helping someone achieve that is super important to me. And conflict management as well as case management is a huge resource for students going through a variety of situations, conflicts, challenges. And so I'm really, really glad that I've been able to be of service to them. So the learning outcomes for today would be, one, to review key terms such as conflict, bias, othering, trauma, and power. We will then talk about conflict management and address the relationship between conflict and power and learn 5 conflict management styles. While we're learning about the conflict management styles, I will present you all with a link in the chat that you all can take an electronic survey so that you can better understand your conflict management style. And I think it may be helpful as we continue the presentation. We would then also talk about being better human, so essentially bystander intervention, and how can we then implement all of the things we learned about conflict management and being a bystander. And so we'll talk about some implementation. We won't really do examples or case studies here just because it may not be as beneficial for you as it is our students. But if you are interested in that, I can send you some of them, and then you can talk about it amongst yourselves at your next meeting. So conflict really involves opposing forces or conflicting ideals. There are many types of conflict, but the ones that we're really going to talk about today is conflict within self, conflict amongst others or groups of people, such as family, friends, kids, Greek life members, teammates, roommates, etc. Conflict within society, environment, or work, just to name a few. And so we can think of a lot of examples regarding conflict if we think about world or environment or government, but we're really going to try to bring it down home a little bit. So bias is a disproportionate weight in favor of or against an idea or thing, usually in a way that's closed-minded, prejudiced, or unfair. Bias can be innate or it can be learned. And so, you know, we can talk about implicit bias or explicit bias. Implicit is when we have attitudes towards people or associate stereotypes with them without knowing it or being conscious of it. Explicit is when individuals are aware of their prejudice and attitudes towards certain groups and choose to display that. So othering is one way that blocks folks from feeling like they belong, is really assigning negative attributes to an individual or a group in a way that sets them apart as inferior from the group, from the main group. So you can really think about it as a us versus them type of mentality. And it happens quite often in educational spaces, from like the popular kids to all these different subgroups that you can find within a school. And that is also the same at the collegiate level as well. Discrimination, I know it's not up here, but just to touch on it real quick, it's the unjust or prejudicial treatment of different categories of people, especially on the grounds of race, age, or sex. Power is the possession of control, authority over others, the ability to act or produce an effect. And then when you think about trauma, it's really the extreme stress that overwhelms a person's ability to cope. So we're really going to talk about how all of these work together. So when you think of conflict, you have to really think about power and how the power dynamic can really impact, one, the relationship between people. So we can also say that power is not always negative. However, when it's used in a way that's not intentional, then it can lead to some negative consequences. So when you think about power, we're going to talk about it in three ways. Structural power, which is derived from a legal or political or some form of authoritative action that exists in a particular situation or position, like systemic racism, othering, and bias. That is the way that it could take place structurally. When you think about personal power, you can think about the personal characteristics and traits which are inherent in the individual, such as determination, resiliency, perseverance, etc. Those are things that we create within ourselves, and it doesn't necessarily come from the outside community. Relational power is the power that comes from a community or an individual. So it's when you give power to someone else. You can think about dominance and privilege. So those in power continuing to promote their group into power. So the majority, you can also think of how we in offices, you know, have this hierarchy. So that's also a way of relational power. So we all hold power in some capacity in various degrees, depending on our relationship to others, to the world, and the identities that we hold. So although power is often thought of as like this way to promote yourself, it's also something that you can use to build communities when done intentionally. It's really about how you use it. But we're going to talk about what happens when power and conflict collide. So ways that bias can show up is a multitude of ways, but today we're talking about four. So when power and conflict collide, you often get bias, you can get trauma, some negative impacts, war, et cetera, which is what we're going to address here. And so the impact of bias are often long-lasting and harmful. Some of it's generational, systemic, financial, spiritual, et cetera. When you think of educational power, just because we're all in higher ed, higher education was created for the privileged by the privileged. It was a way to support and promote those in power. It is often considered one of the main driving economic growth opportunities across the United States for a lot of minoritized individuals of like maybe race, sex, economic status. It is one of the few ways that you can promote yourself in a powerful, in a power space. But it is difficult for most U.S. citizens, particularly those of color and undocumented folks, to successfully complete a higher education degree without support and recognizing the ways that bias can show up. So when we think about like some of the economic inequalities within higher education. Oftentimes, high-achieving, low-income students don't always have the same access to selective schools. Mm-hmm. And so those resources are normally towards the university, state institutions, et cetera, but they may not always be the best school for the individual. So also we can talk about inconsistency with supportive resources. When we think about professional bias, it can show itself in various ways, such as the way an employer makes a decision for the business, or how they hire someone. So is it more of an affinity, like, oh, I see myself with this individual, so we're more inclined to hire people that remind us of us, or, you know, the type of people that we enjoy being around. And that's not always, you know, best case, and so we're using our bias in that manner. For religious bias, we can really talk about negative attitudes or behaviors between people of different religious groups because of their differing beliefs. And so, you know, various wars have been fought over religion, and that the winner often can perpetuate some bias or stereotypes about the other folks' religion or choice. And so I think even at Cornell, it has some relevance here. I know when I started in December, there's been bias reports made because I am one of the co-facilitators and co-chairs of our bias assessment review team, BERT, around Jewish students and how they don't belong here, like maybe swastikas, not maybe, swastikas have been put in snow or on boards within residence halls, and so we also have that here as well. I am going to show you all two short clips that really continues to expound upon the bias in the classroom, which I think maybe a lot of you may see, as well as some of the blind spots. It is still connected to my headphones. My apologies. Can you all hear that?
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm not like her. You call it an honest mistake. It's not called the last part. Our unconscious mind is a mysterious and powerful thing. It makes 90% of our decisions without us even knowing. Our brains are overloaded with 11 million pieces of information every second. Yet, we can only process about 40 of them. So we're wired to make cognitive shortcuts using past experiences to make assumptions. And you know what happens when we assume. Our unconscious mind can put us on autopilot, determining where we sit, who we eat lunch with, who we turn to for advice, and who we choose to offer our help. Living our lives with blind spots can put us in a tunnel, same point of view, same decisions, same outcomes. We can find ourselves trapped in the land of snap judgments and misconceptions. We've all been on both the giving and receiving end of blind spots. Think about it. Who's talented? Who's able? Who can I trust? Who belongs? We've all been there. Blind spots are part of the human condition. Our choices have consequences for us and the people we interact with. By accepting that blind spots exist, we can stop. Imagine what possibilities exist if we can do it all over again. Inclusive relationships, diverse networks, better outcomes, seeing people who live in. like you, with unlimited potential. We all have blind spots. Once you accept that you have them, you can choose to do something about it. It's time to check your blind spots and focus on what's possible.
So thoughts on what we just watched? I have to find you all first.
I love that, Danny. I think, like the speaker said, we all have blind spots, and it's important in your day-to-day interactions with your colleagues, with other people, you know, that you're interacting with, to just be aware of that, to consider that, and to kind of remind yourself every day, because it's something we all can, I think, work on and grow from.
Thank you. Is it Brandon?
Yes, that's right. Thanks, Danny. I often tell a story of moving from Texas to New York City and working with a person of color and almost saying something to them and realizing once I was not in the context of being around family that used this statement, which I won't repeat, that it was a racist statement that I had no idea. I had grown up my entire life, had said it as just a simple, funny remark, and then as I was about to say it to someone not in that same context, fortunately my brain stopped and went, whoa, don't do that. And it was like the perfect example of, without a doubt, a complete and total blind spot that I had no idea, no association to it, but being in a different context, able to understand what the impact of the statement was.
Thank you for sharing. Eric?
Thank you, Danny. This was a really cool video just to see. I've been thinking about this recently, and I didn't realize what it was called. So I definitely think in terms of my blind spots, recently, there was a session that Reginald White actually on our call today had given about microaffirmations. And that had, you know, kind of got me thinking about these blind spots and where I have them and where I notice them in my daily life. You know, if it's holding a door for somebody, or, you know, whether or not I should jump in and help an individual, whether they would feel comfortable, whether I would feel comfortable. It's really allowed me to think a little bit deeper and identify those blind spots. So, thank you for sharing the video. It was really good and very, very thoughtful.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Would any of you like to share ways that you all, or your blind spots while you're inside the classroom or your workspace? I'll go. Oftentimes, before I actually started working in higher education, one, I didn't know it was like a career opportunity. I know it doesn't sound like rational thing that I went to college and there were people that worked there. But I was like, oh goodness. So when I first started working in higher education, the folks that I was introduced to were all like, they majored in higher education. They had like this certain thought process, et cetera. And so one of my blind spots was acknowledging that's not everyone's background, right? Because for the first two universities I've worked at, it was. And then I joined the Dean of Students Care and Crisis Team, and higher education was not any of our majors. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like, these are my people, right? And so sometimes the blind spot can be attached to maybe imposter syndrome, which was something that I was struggling with when I joined higher education because that wasn't my background. And so it was my blind spot, maybe because I didn't want people to see it in myself, right? So really just connecting some of the reasons why we have them. The other part when you think about blind spots is once you recognize that you have them, are you willing and able to go back and maybe correct or apologize to those you've harmed because of them? We're human, so we all have them. We will all make mistakes. But when you think about conflict management and when I'm coaching folks, that's the other piece. Like once we recognize our weaknesses or areas of improvements or growth opportunities, one, we want to change moving forward, but do we also have the responsibility and the forethought to also repair some of that we've already impacted with. And so if I could just have maybe two individuals share like some of their blind spots in their current role. If you raise your hand, it like pops up on this main screen, so I don't have to like scroll through the pages.
Yep, and members should raise their hands. Thank you.
Reginald?
Yeah, so I waited consciously just to see whether other folks would have something to say. But the fact that there was such silence suggests that our blind spots are blinded to them, right? Because if you can't actually acknowledge them, they're blind to you. It's the sort of the whole idea of a blind spot. But I think in general, right, you mentioned that you had been to and lived in Beijing, China. Until you travel, right, for me personally, my first trip to Asia, I traveled to Tokyo and to Hong Kong. And I realized that I really hadn't paid attention to people's differences in terms of the various countries. I hadn't really understood the history of what was going on in Asia at the same time things were going on in the United States. And that I really was the whole kind of concept of being in a country where it was the time zones were shifted completely opposite, right? That while I was awake or asleep, right, they were doing just the opposite thing. So just this having the opportunity to travel and then find myself in a completely different circumstance that all of a sudden reminded me, I don't know what I don't know. And that whole trip, I remember just so many different things. I was like, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I was listening to conversations. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And then, you know, even coming back to the States, trying to then operate as if I didn't know what I didn't know, but I wanted to know. And so that to me is the sort of the connection that you're making, right, is you ask the question. Once you know you have a blind spot and you do something to harm someone, are you willing to go back and apologize? But also, are you willing to no longer be blind? So what Brandon mentioned in terms of, you know, his comment, the things that he'd been saying on a regular basis. So appreciate the conversation and thank you.
Thank you. Brandon?
Thanks, Reginald. I think the example, I actually had one today where it was very small and simple, but it was I was asking of someone to take on this task at work. And then I was in another meeting and I was like, oh, I asked so and so to do that. They haven't said yes, but they haven't said no. You know, they're still thinking about it. Mind you, it was a silly thing I was asking them, not like anything really super challenging, but it was something they would have to be in costume and do the silly thing. And I really wanted them to do it. And I didn't hear them saying they didn't want to do it. And so when I said, oh, they're probably going to do it. And somebody's like, no, they're not. They don't want to do that. And I was like, oh, no, that's not what they said. Like, no, they don't. And I had to go back to them and say, like, you know what? I want to acknowledge I really wanted you to do this. And you said some things and I didn't hear you. I didn't hear you saying no to that. I apologize if, you know, I inferred that and kind of made that happen. And it was such a simple thing. I won't take up too much time, but I did the Harold Craft program, and they did this exercise that I think everybody should go through with some warning that it is very challenging. It's an exercise where you have to take your shoes off, and you learn about this idea of taking somebody's shoes and the impact that it has in a much more metaphorical sort of sense. But it was really eye-opening to think about. I've asked people to do things that made them extraordinarily challenged or at times perhaps uncomfortable or out of their comfort zone. And oftentimes I find that I can be blind to whether or not they are in that space or not. And acknowledging that is hard. And it was such a simple thing asking someone to wear a silly costume and do a thing, but enough for me to know, like, I really need to continue to work on that and hearing people when they're saying, like, I like you a lot and I respect you and I don't want to say no, but I don't really want to do this.
Thank you.
Hi there. Thank you so much for coming and presenting. I feel like all of this material is very relevant and really helpful as we think about some of these challenges. I started a new job, and I'm a financial analyst, but I was coming from a college perspective, and now I'm in my new role. It's sort of like an overall institution perspective and looking at the same issues as a financial analyst from like a college perspective, and then from a university perspective has kind of shown how we're sort of looking at things differently, and there are things that I might know from a college perspective that maybe on a university perspective isn't as well known. And I think when we look at, you know, social issues, I think people are coming with their different perspectives and how they're using systems, how they're acknowledging systems, how they're acknowledging and using infrastructure that is just so different. And I think when we have these conversations and we talk through issues, something maybe even as basic as like perhaps our endowment. I was speaking to someone who was doing general accounting that was like, well, the endowment is doing very well. Like, shouldn't the payout be doing very well? But not necessarily. And so the way we interact with information in front of us, I think, is impacted so much by, you know, where we're coming from and not knowing where other people are coming from. I think there are all these bridges that sort of cross together. And I think there's a lot of great learning to be had through facilitating conversation and really kind of understanding what our blind spots are. So thank you so much for the presentation and allowing us all this time to chat and talk about these things. Thanks.
Thank you. So I'm going to move on after this statement, but I do want to say at one major blind spot that I see higher education in general, or maybe just adulting, adults in general, having is the connection between like life and then what's expected of you. A lot of times when our students come to us and they're like, I can't do this because of this, right? It's like, okay, sometimes we think, oh, they're being lazy or they lack the ability to compartmentalize, like, et cetera, but life does not stop, and we know this, right? Just because we're in school. And I know, like, COVID's been happening, what, 18 months, 19 months? I don't know if you all are counting. I have a little kiddo, like I said, and this pandemic has stretched me. And so I remember thinking, like, feeling tired, right? But I couldn't, like, pinpoint it. Like, the exhaustion that I felt was very different than, you know, just general fatigue from being overworked. And so it hit me. I heard a colleague say, wearing a mask in public and like the uprising and uproar about it is very similar to how minoritized folks show up in spaces that they're not always welcomed in, right? So code switching, et cetera. And so seeing all of these things in the world, right? And then you got to wear a mask, and then I'm coming to work and I just moved. Like, I was like, oh my goodness, I was blind to, like, I knew the pandemic was exhausting. I knew all these things, right? But that was my blind spot. Like, how many more folks are on campus or that I'm interacting with having that same weight on them that I just wasn't recognizing because I couldn't pinpoint it for myself, so I wasn't able to pinpoint it for anyone else. And so I think that has been a very huge eye-opener for me. Because I was like, oh, my goodness. And so I wanted to share that in this space as well. Brian, you can be our last statement.
Gee, thanks. So I'm thinking about, you know, we all have blind spots, whether we want to admit it or not, or whether we want to acknowledge it or not. Some are known to us, some not known to us, some are to others, not everyone else. I guess one of the things I wanted to add is I think we need to get in a different position with ourselves. We need to start looking for reasons why it is instead of questioning why it is. And I think that helps because for me, it's like I try to process things now. Before, I was quick to judge and said things and done things that were just judgmental. And now I look for the reason why it's like that. Simple things like somebody came to me and said, I don't understand why we have to wear a mask if we're vaccinated. And I kind of turned it around and said, well, why don't you figure out why that is? I'm sure you'll find answers. And just asking the question with that question and that reference, meaning that there's some people that can't be vaccinated Have you ever thought about that? Well, no, I haven't thought about that. So turning those things around and trying to find the reasons why. Why is this like that? Well, let's find out. Let's find out, because there's a reason why things are like they are. We just don't know them. And I always think about, you know, on campus, things tend to go full circle sometimes. And there's reasons why things are being done, and people don't always understand them. They did some history checking, and looking back, they might better understand it. So that's one of the things that I do to help me with some of my blind spots. I don't know if it's helpful here, but always look for the reasons why it is that way. Don't always assume you know the answer.
Yes, that's spot on. So I think, Derek, you mentioned microaggressions or microaffirmations. This short video touches on it. If you really enjoy this video, the entire segment, I believe, is about 20 minutes, so you can find it on YouTube.
There's a city for a black girl. I feel like it just comes to me as a person, and then it slowly becomes like me. I feel like it's in the city just because you're a woman, or, you know, are all black women are beautiful, all people of color are beautiful, just the same as people that are not people of color. So for them to make that specific statement, that's what I'm like, what made you say that to me? As if it were a compliment. So another type of micro insult is when students in the classroom are dismissed or treated almost as if they're invisible. For instance, in some of our sciences or engineering classes, there are few women, and professors often don't call on those women.
I had one instance in a statistics-based class where we were discussing something about curve-related. He presented a question, and I don't remember exactly what the answer was, but I answered it, and he kind of doubted me. And he very condescendingly was just like, oh, okay, well, I mean, like, this is the best answer, but I guess your answer could be right. You know what, we'll ask, he was a grad student. He was like, you know what, we'll ask Dr. So-and-so and see what he thinks the best answer is. And there was no apology or anything. He was just like, oh, yeah, Dr. So-and-so said that, yeah, that was actually a really acceptable answer. And he just said, okay. What else is he going to doubt me on, and what else am I going to be called out in front of 70 other people, you know, and have a weird exchange that makes the whole room quiet? Like, one of my science classes, my teacher had asked what I wanted to do, and I told the teacher that I wanted to be a psychiatrist. And immediately they're like, that's too hard for you. Maybe you should try and get this field, or have you ever thought about being a nurse practitioner, in psychiatry, they make a lot of money too. And thought about that, like, why go to that school? Generally, somebody might feel like they can't make it, you know, and then you continue to tell them it does hurt, you know?
I have a lot of professors tell me in my face that they were surprised that I was as good a student as I was. That I paid attention to class and actually participated. When I asked why, typically, you know, you didn't come on to the full picture. You have all these weird things, the short hair, the girl with tattoos. We just naturally seem like you're really going to be any good.
So, that video, I love it, actually. I know it's only 3 minutes that I showed you. Again, if you have time to watch the whole video, it's mind-blowing, right? Like, the things that people say, you're like, how could they not know? And one of the things that I always tell the students, when people think of microaggression, micro-insult, micro-invalidation, they're like, well, how do I know? Like, what happened if I'm being too emotional or overthinking? And then one, if you experience something that causes pain within you, then acknowledge that, right? And so oftentimes you're walking into these spaces and you're having these experiences and you're not processing them, or you're not having, or you don't have the support that you need, or you just don't even know what it is. You haven't named it. And that can create conflict. And so we're going to talk about ways that we can, I'm going to minimize you all, that we can handle conflict that may be significantly around bias or identity-based challenges. So there are five conflict management styles that we're going to review. I am going to put the link in the chat if I'm skilled enough. Oh, look at me. If you all wouldn't mind taking this, I'll allow you about 3 to 5 minutes. It's pretty short. The answers are out of 60, or the score is out of 60, and so we're going to come back and just talk a little bit about the conflict management style. Just to make sure, this is till 1:30, correct?
It is, but we do have more on our agenda.
Oh, okay. My apologies.
But this is really good, though, Danny. If you all can put the hand raise symbol up so I can see how many of you have completed it. Okay, so I think most of you have completed it. We can do maybe one more minute before we
talk about the scoring. Okay, so we're going to, okay, you all can put your hands down because now I'm going to ask who wouldn't mind sharing what they scored. I'll always start first. So I have taken this many times, and I do want to say there's never a right or wrong answer, you know, and it changes. It changes based on the environment we're in, how we value the relationships, et cetera. There's a lot of different nuances that play in how we respond to a conflict. But for me, the gold star will always be collaborative. Essentially, when I took this, I scored collaborative second and compromise first. The reason compromise for people like myself in the social service or those who industry or those who are very intentional in helping folks, you compromise because you always want to ensure that the folks that you're working with or the people that you're working with walk away with some type of win or support or achievement. And so oftentimes that often flows over into my personal space because I'm so used to managing or fighting conflict for so many other folks that sometimes I may compromise when I shouldn't personally and or be avoidant just because I'm exhausted from doing it for a living at times. And so sometimes, again, it just changes based on, you know, where you are in your life that day and time when you take it. Are there maybe two or three folks who wouldn't mind sharing their scores? If you can just unmute yourselves, because the hands are still raised, so I don't know who to call on.
Can I say, I don't know how to interpret my scores. This is Anise Shaft. My scores were 38, 30, 38, 30, 38. So I don't know what that, did I?
So you, no, you didn't. That just means you're fairly even with how you manage conflict. Again, the highest or the score is out of 60. So you score 38 on 4 of them or 3 of them?
On 3. Every other one was 38 and and the avoidant competitive were 30.
Okay. So you accommodate, collaborate, or compromise equally when you're managing conflict. Mm-hmm. It's what that score is saying.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else care to share?
I can figure out what I'm looking at here. I'm going to be honest. I feel like I failed a test here.
You can't fail it.
So I know, but there's a big red number here, 44 out of 60, so it makes me feel like I failed something. So it's, I'm on the page, it's, what is it, collaborating, avoiding, competing, accommodating? Is it in the order?
There's no order.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
I'm not sure which results to share then, I'm sorry. I'm looking at
I
may be on the wrong page.
Which score is the highest for you? And you can be
I'm on to another page, I'm sorry, where it's showing 44 out of 60, 70% my individual answers. So
which one was 44 out of 60?
It's not telling me. Maybe someone else should go because I'm not sure if I'm on the right page here.
Oh, actually, Adrian, I'm sharing your confusion. Because yes. My 38, 30, 38, 30 was like an earlier, I didn't click all the way through.
Yeah, it was another page, right? A previous page.
And yeah, and now I'm on a page with yellow that just says 63.3%.
Exactly.
And it doesn't say of what. So,
exactly.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't understand.
So we're on the same, because I'm like, okay, 73% makes me feel like I failed something, and I'm not sure which results here to share. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Okay. My apologies. It's the 38-30, so how you...
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Ellen, do you have something to say?
Hi, this is Michelle Leparco. I downloaded my results, and it gave me a score for each, and I put in the chat, I had 42 for accommodating, 36 for avoiding, 38 collaborating, 30 competing, and 40 for compromising.
Thank you. Pretty.
There are several hands raised, Brian, Kate, and Alan. I don't know if you see them.
So can we just go in that order? Would you just say it, Brian, Kate, and Alan?
Brian.
Brian, sorry.
Yeah, I can share mine. I think they went to the next page where it has the percentages all outlined. But mine, I ended up doing collaborating first with 43, accommodating 37, compromising 35, and avoiding and competing 31 on both of them. At the end, when you go to the next page, it gives us 71.7%. Is that what you were looking for?
No, I wanted the scoring that you just stated.
All right.
Thank you. Kate?
I think in the instance of time, fairness of time, if we can, if Kate's not responding, we can move forward.
Alan?
Yeah, thanks. I found it interesting as a lawyer and as a bargaining agent previously for the university. I had the same score of 40 for accommodating, collaborating, and compromising. The lowest score was avoiding, which was 30, and competitive was 36. So I found it interesting that three were, equal.
I actually think that's very accurate based on what you just said that you do for the institution.
Hmm. Okay.
So we're going to go over it. So accommodating is when you tend to cooperate to a high degree, and it sometimes can be at your own expense. Ellen said competing 37. Which is also not very surprising. And a lot of our students score very highly on that because higher education either creates that or encourages that type of mentality in our students, especially like an Ivy League. We're very selective, right? So you have to be competitive to, one, get here and oftentimes to achieve things in life in general. And so oftentimes, the way we manage conflict changes based on the situation, those who are involved in the conflict, what we're fighting for, et cetera. And it changes all the time. So this is not finite. So when you are accommodating, you can cooperate to a high degree that may be at your own expense or work against your goals. And so this approach is effective when the other party is an expert or has a better solution. So it can be effective for preserving future relationships with the other party. Also, when you think of accommodating, you can refer to this value of own issue or goal low versus you value that other relationship high. So avoiding is when you simply avoid the issue. Prior to me being a professional in general, so I've been working for 11 years as a professional outside of school. And I used to be very avoidant. Like, I never wanted to make people angry. I hated getting in trouble. Like, it just made me so uncomfortable to manage conflict. And so I was avoidant. I really rarely, I very rarely would step into a conflict. And so I just didn't really value my own issue or goal. And so it was very low. And the result always was I would lose and someone else would win. When you think of collaborating, it's the win-win. Again, like I said, it's the gold star. But it requires a lot of time, a high degree of trust, and reaching a consensus, which we don't always have based on the situation or issue. Competing is this win-lose approach. You're fighting to win, sometimes at all costs versus to the individual. So you value yourself high over the other person. But depending on what you do for a living, or again, what the relationship or situation is, it can be very fitting. And then the last one is compromise. It's the lose-lose. So it's the scenario where you kind of value yourself and the other person equally. Nothing is really achieved. It's just like the status quo, like, oh, okay, I'm satisfied, you're satisfied. It's the middle ground. And that works in a lot of situations where it's just a very quick issue and you want to deal with it and move on, right? So those are the ways that we code how we manage conflict. Now, when we think about the things we talked about earlier, such as bias, trauma, othering, etc., and the power, you can see how we would, or all of those things can change how we manage conflict. So when you're looking at your students or in your personal space or workspace, when you're thinking like, how can I manage this? It depends on where you are. Are you a person in power, or are you a student? Are you a faculty? Are you a staff? Do you have a relationship with this individual? Do you feel comfortable? All of those things take into account how we manage conflict. And so one thing I always tell people is that never sell yourself short. Never say, well, I don't matter, or this doesn't matter, it's not that big deal, et cetera, because that's not true. And when thinking of how you interact with the students, I'm going to stop sharing. How you interact with students or support students, that's where we can really start to think about some of the things when we say life doesn't stop for school. Conflict is a part of life, and we shouldn't be afraid to address it or handle it. We can just really start to be more intentional on how we interact and how we're managing conflict. That is all that I have for you.
Thank you, Danny. This was very interesting, and I was happy to see members engaged in this. Thank you. Thank you for bringing this to the students as well, and thanks to Hey for connecting you with us. We appreciate that.
Thank you. Andrea, do you have a question for me?
I just thank you for it. It would be great if we could get your presentation as well as the links to this stuff, as well as if people are able to maybe do this at another time so that they can spend some time with it. That would be really helpful if we could get that from you, if that's possible.
Yes, I will put that in the chat. We do have a website under the Care and Crisis webpage. It's the Conflict Coaching and Mediation Services. That is the program that I've created. And then once you click on that, it gives a brief overview of our area as well as a link where you can request training, which is very similar to this. I do alter it based on request. So I will put all of that information for you in the chat. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. And Kate, I think your hand is just has been up, so I'm going to, if you have a question, please go ahead and speak up, but I'm going to move on. I would like to get our new members welcomed. Jamie, did you want to say something briefly?
I just wanted to just, in case anyone wasn't aware, we have the five new members, one for College of Architecture, Art and Planning. We have Stephanie Rezu. For the School of Continuing Education, Summer Sessions, and East Cornell, we have Anisha Schaff. For the representing less than 5 years of service, we have Jeremy Stewart. And the two at-large representatives are Justin Chandler and Adrian Durant. And so just wanted to officially welcome them aboard.
Yes, welcome to our new members. We're so excited to have you. Having you with us just helps us, you know, as the voice of the staff, having more of our seats filled allows us to have a stronger, wider voice. This is exciting. Thank you.
Thank you.
We do the President's Address to Staff is coming up, and I would like us to move quickly to committee reports so Andrea can update everyone on that. There will be an email going out, but I think it's really good to be able to hear the exec update, and then we'll see how many other committee reports we can get to. Thanks, everyone. So first up is Executive Committee with Andrea.
Hi, and welcome everybody. We're so happy that you're able to join us. Just a couple of quick things that the exec committee has been working on. Next Friday, a week from this Friday, is the President's Address to Staff. All of the information has gone out about that. It would be really helpful. I know that Ellen was going to be talking with folks about volunteers and, you know, for those of you who plan on being there in person versus folks that are online, we will have cookies, water, and apples to pass out to people that are in person. So we're really quite excited that we're actually going ahead and able to blend that. There. And then on Wednesday, the 17th, the President is coming and addressing the EA. We have been working through a lot of the details for both of these events because there's a lot of protocols to go through. For the presentation to the EA, we have to submit our questions in advance of that. So probably tomorrow I will be sending out a Qualtrics survey to folks and asking you to fill that out if you have any questions in advance so that we can get those to the President's office. And I think in the interest of time to give other people, those are the two big things that the executive committee has been working on and trying to be able to do that. So Jessica or other exec, I don't believe I'm forgetting anything. I think those were two big things, and we'll give additional time to the others.
Those were our two big things, and they're very big things, and they're taking, I think that's what we focused on. Yes. Yeah. I'm going to move forward and just move on to Communications, Outreach, and Recognition Committee with Ellen.
Yeah. Hi. As a follow-up to Andrea's information about the President's Address to Staff, we will be presenting the EA Appreciation Award during that event. And we received 6 nominations this year, and I sent around the Qualtrics for voting, and I checked the votes right before coming to this meeting, and we have a tie, and we have about 11 members who have not voted yet. So if you have not voted yet, please do so like immediately following this meeting because we need your vote. I will put the Qualtrics in the chat right now. I just did. But I will also send a reminder email immediately following this meeting. Maybe I will send it directly to those of you who have not voted so that you have that. And once I have a clear idea of who our winner is, I will let everyone know, but we will, that will be, you know, internal for the EA. We will announce the over to the campus community will be announced at the President's Address to Staff. So in addition to that, we have been working on Derek. Thank you, Derek, so much. He's been helping work on some new promotions for the EA, and we have designed, along with another member of our communications committee, a updated flyer for EA to kind of get the word out about what we do and how people can get involved. So we hope to be distributing that during the president's address to people who come in person. And we're also working on, you know, maybe some more fun ways to get that word out. We have some stickers in the works and some other stuff. So we're working on promotions. And then as Jessica and Andrea mentioned, I will be sending around a call for volunteers. Actually, while I have you, I know we're running short on time, but if anyone that's on the call right now is planning to attend the president's address in person and is able to help, can you raise your hand and I'll follow up with you directly? Marcy, anyone else? Andrea, well, we're making you be there, Andrea. You don't have a choice. All right. Thank you. I will follow up with you guys directly after this, and then I'll send out a questionnaire to the entire EA body, too, for those who may have missed it. And what else? Our awards and recognition subcommittee will be meeting on Monday. If anyone is interested in helping with that, they're going to be working next on the employee award for I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head right now. It's the Inclusion Award. It's the renamed Opperman Award that we did last year. They're going to be working on that. So if anyone's interested in working on that with them, let me know. I can get you added to that meeting invite for Monday. I'm not that organized right now. I'm sorry. Again, please, if you're not logging into Teams, do it. You've been added to the EA Teams channel, everyone, and we've been posting updates there as well. There was an announcement today from Ashley Miller and the HR team. They'd like us to put some kudos on their kudos boards for the Employee Excellence Awards winners, and Brian Goodell and his building care team have a fundraiser going on for the Cornell Elves program. So those kind of announcements we're going to be putting in the Teams channel, and those are for you, but also for you to share with your constituents, your teams, your colleagues, everyone. So keep an eye on that, and I think I'll shut up now since we only have 3 minutes left.
Thank you, Ellen. It's a lot. Brian did have to leave, but I can quickly say that the Benefits and Policy Committee, Gordon Barger joined them after his presentation to us last time, and that was a really productive small group session with Gordon. So yes, it is 1:27. Christy, do you want to give a, I know some people have left. I'm not sure if I see Christy actually. So I think, I don't see her. Marcy, do you want to give a very quick update on the Education Committee?
I can. Give a very quick update. We met, discussed what we're going to, our plans of attack, looking at comparing educational benefits from other universities, create a formal resolution to support class, continuing monitoring the different education programs and how to promote better, perhaps a future article spotlight on staff development. And I need to plan another meeting soon, but that's the quick Reader's Digest version.
Thank you. And last is Elections Committee, which actually, Jamie, have anything more to say?
Just that this concludes the special election, and so I am no longer the Elections Committee chair, and so I look forward to us finding a chair for the spring, because that will be a big election.
That should be Marin, as far as I know. I think she'll be back by then, unless you've heard something different. But I would like to take the time to thank Jamie for his work on the special election. That was a lot of work in a compressed amount of time, and I think it was successful, and thank you very much. So at 1:29, I'll entertain motions to extend.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.